Monsieur.
Attention. Attention. Live midday news. Singularly, the most dramatic escape of any prisoner known in the history. The fortress prison concentration camp of West Germany that has housed the Baader-Meinhof group that is known derogatorily, but is really an adjunct of the Red Army of West Germany, fascist West Germany, a puppet of U.S. imperialism. Today, several women, we seem to see a great deal of courage in women who have suffered, who pull off some of the most heroic events in our time, were able to get inside the prison, fooling the guards, and released the major person on trial for the murder of fascist federal attorney general, responsible for all of the repressive fascist laws, who was shot down and his guards killed several months ago in West Germany in reprisal for the terror that had been brought upon the working class in the Federal Republic, fascist West Germany, that prides itself as being the inheritor of Hitler's Third Reich. In spite of their fascist terrorism, they still speak of USA's manipulation of their puppets by tariff barriers, etc. Their prime minister of West Germany has accused the United States of following economic policies that will lead shortly to a worldwide depression. Nonetheless, this young man who was on trial for his life for taking this political act of vengeance for the people in the organization of the assassination or execution of this fascist head attorney general of West Germany and several others who have been taken hostage, has been successfully released, sprung from that prison. The whole Western world is shook up by the success of the operation. One guard taken in by a lady who knew how to direct her body for revolution ended up dead with a fingernail file. They had very little equipment that they could get in, but with what little they had, they successfully killed enough guards to get their people free. The leading leader of the Baader-Meinhof group, that is an adjunct similar to the Red Army of Japan and the Red Brigade of Germany, that believes that there's only one way to bring down capitalist institutions, and that is by violent acts of demonstration wherever possible. No clues to the whereabouts of the fugitive, the individual who had been working actively and bravely in the Red Brigade of the Fascist Republic, Federal Republic of West Germany, a puppet of U.S. imperialism. Egypt's repression continues to the point of open terror. All dissent against Anwar Sadat is put under penalty of subversion. Several journalists abroad, even moderate and capitalist journalists, have been recalled, facing indictments, and several capitalist countries are cooperating by expelling them and sending them back to Egypt to a certain death. The people foolishly in Egypt gave power to Anwar Sadat, dictator now, former prime minister of Egypt, to have the power in a referendum to alter constitutional liberties and have emergency powers because of threats, so-called, against the state. Every time they talk about threats, like the FBI is whipping up that sort of thing in USA and passing all sorts of repressive measures. And Senate Bill 1437, which I require all to listen to at some point in the library. It should be played by classes and in various sessions all day, and at some point piped over the air for reconsumption before People's Rally tonight. It must be digested very well. Senate Bill 1437 must be digested very well. It typifies the monstrous police state tactics now being employed. Egypt has also whipped up in their now controlled press a frenzy of hate towards Libya that has been an ally of liberation in Africa. Oil-rich Libya under Colonel Gaddafi has also been pro-Soviet, though he is Muslim. Egypt is whipping up a war fervor, and there is talk of armed conflict between Egypt and Libya. Libya has been responsible for the liberation of Chad and assistance given the liberation of Tunisia and West Sahara, as well as assistance given to liberation causes throughout the length and breadth of Africa and the Near East. Katanganese, in spite of U.S. imperialism's avalanche of bombs dropping upon them, still maintain pockets of resistance in Zaire. At this point, they have not released their hostages held in Angola, and the Soviet Union is still bravely backing the Cuban forces and the Angolan forces and saying any attack on Angola will be met with total retaliation. So the Soviet Union is still maintaining a most consistent avant-garde position of bravely supporting the liberators of mankind. The hue and cry in Washington, the ballyhoo of both the Republicans and Democrats, two sides of the same capitalistic complexion, two sides of that horrible capitalistic erection, two sides of the same evil coin, are calling for Carter to have a freer hand for military appropriations in Western Africa. Union of South Africa has been forced by turmoil inside its territory to release a moderate black publisher who had called for more dignity to black people. He has received international awards for his journalistic measures. He was the owner and publisher of The World and was held without trial, without bail, without even an indictment under the horrible detention laws of fascist South Africa that were modeled after the CIA and are now in practice in Washington, D.C. But there's been such a clamor that it has brought about his release. These are encouraging signs that liberation will come about in Africa, because the Union of South Africa is capitalism's, world imperialism's final bastion of strong police state power. It is rumored that Union of South Africa has nuclear reactors. Nonetheless, Britain and England are being forced to back away more and more from their good and willing fascist servant and close puppet ally. Other news of the day. In brief, France and USA is calling for immediate retaliation by NATO against the Cubans and the Angolans. But again, the Soviet Union does not seem to be the slightest intimidated. Now we will discuss Black Africa in the balance. During the recent visit to Nigeria, as you know, where President Carter was caught by the rather moderate to conservative president through intelligence forces, close committees in defense of the revolution of Nigeria. He was caught consulting in the Nigerian Hilton Hotel with elements of the big business world and banking industries, trying to bring down the Nigerian economy, and has been attacked consistently by oil-rich Nigeria ever since. During that visit to Nigeria, the first by a United States president to any country in Black Africa, thus showing the absolute disregard that U.S. presidents have for Africa, President Carter committed his administration, lyingly, to strive for a continent at peace, free from colonialism and military interference, condemning Soviet and Cuban liberation in the Horn of Africa, where at this very moment, Ethiopia has strong control over that passageway vital to all free socialist peoples, as they have control of Eritrea again and have backed off the U.S. monopoly capitalists, finance capitalists, imperialists, and their lackeys like China, and have sea access full at Eritrea, their own territory. Eritrea is completely back in the control of the nation that it rightfully belongs to, Ethiopia, due to the brave and heroic fighting forces aiding the Ethiopian revolution, the Soviet Union, and Cuba. But Carter, still condemning in the news strongly the Soviet and Cuban so-called intervention in the Horn of Africa, Carter said, "Military intervention of outside powers are their proxies in such disputes too often makes local conflicts even more complicated and opens the door to new forms of domination." Hypocritically, he said, that is, Carter said, "We oppose such domination, such intervention. We must not allow great power rivalries to destroy our hopes for an Africa at peace," meaning an Africa for U.S. imperialists to exploit. His fine words met with some skepticism from his host, who feel that U.S. practice does not always by any means conform to its proclaimed policies. Significantly, President Carter, president, figurehead, populist leader, now sold out entirely to the interest of the Trilateral Commission, the final stranglehold rulers of the monopoly capitalist world. Significantly, Carter rejected a request by the Nigerian leader that he support the imposition of economic sanctions against South Africa. Carter would not go along with that. However, today, Carter is being put in more and more of a difficult position, and he doesn't mind sacrificing his allies, as he did just 2 days ago when he sacrificed Taiwan, which he had pledged, USA had pledged eternal unity and solidarity to back up Taiwan in its right of self-determination against People's Republic of China. But the word of a capitalist does not matter. Capitalists would sacrifice their own mother or children to save their own ass in the finality. That's one of the contradictions that will destined to bring capitalism down. Why did Carter come to Africa in the first place? The answer is to make a claim for the right to influence developments on the continent comparable to that exercised by the former colonial power masters. Break in the news. Dr. Hamilton Green, Minister of Labor, Minister of Health, Minister of Works, has got the full consent of Cabinet that all of our medical supplies will be able to enter this country duty-free. So we find we are gaining increasing support in Guyana, no matter that we are facing the terrorism abroad. One can face the terrorism of U.S. imperialism through its wicked arm of the press, the TV, the radio, the newspapers, and survive and have peace, knowing that you are at least struggling with people who are willing to resist the machinations of imperialism. As you know, Prime Minister Burnham, by statement of Dr. Mingo, Minister of Home Affairs and Minister of Immigration, strong cabinet member, who's been very friendly, and our liaison, our contact person with the Prime Minister, and our friend, the Deputy Prime Minister, Dr. Reid, who is the head of the chairperson of the PNC, the People's National Congress. Dr. Mingo informed us that Dr. Burnham, Prime Minister Burnham, has refused the first socialist nation in the Caribbean, except Cuba, to do so, has refused any aid from the International Monetary Fund, which is controlled by USA and headquartered in Washington. It would have amounted to $1 billion. But Prime Minister Burnham said it would have brought this country back under colonialism, and he does not intend to allow USA to dictate to him or any colonial power to again control this free republic. These are brave words, reminiscent of the words that impressed me with Dr. Burnham many years ago when he was fueling Cuban planes on their way to liberate Angola. Kissinger said it could mean the destruction of Guyana, and he demanded that he be allowed to land and talk with Prime Minister Burnham. He was leaving from Rio de Janeiro, the military government of Brazil. Burnham said, "We would rather die on our feet than to beg on our knees." And he said that he suggested that Mr. Kissinger not risk himself by landing and fly straight over Guyana, that he did not want to speak to the prestigious Secretary of State from the United States. There is that side to Burnham that gives one great peace. One does not mind having enemies. 2 out of 3 babies in the world are starving. They have all enemies. Elements, everything are against them because of U.S. imperialism's stranglehold on the world. Now we have isolated our warfare to the major front, the core of the cancer, USA imperialism. We must do everything in our power to save. You must get all your suggestions for saving and making money into Kay Nelson, Clevis Need, Christine Lucientis, and others. Christine Lucientis is gathering it and compiling it, and every member must have it in before People's Rally. I thought you would be encouraged by this good news, further backing of the government. Dr. Hamilton Green, before Cabinet, got a special concession with the only medical clinic to have such, that all of our medical equipment and supplies will enter Guyana custom-free, duty-free, tax-free. Back to Carter, the colonial power. He refused, as I said, to agree to any imposition of economic sanction against South Africa. Carter came to Africa to strike a claim and stake a claim for the right to influence developments on the continent comparable to that exercised by the former colonial masters. At the end of the Second World War, there were only 3 independent countries on the African continent: Ethiopia, Liberia, and Egypt. Today, there are 50. Yet, few of those has managed to free itself entirely from ties of dependency on the imperialist countries, not even those which have openly chosen the road to socialism, although they have every honest intention of doing so. In most of Africa, imperialism has been replaced by neocolonialism, outright colonialism for neocolonialism, a device by which imperialists have found it possible to concede the exercise of the appearance of political independence to Africans while preserving and extending their economic exploitation of the human and material resources on that vast continent, which is the one continent that has mineral riches sufficient to maintain a modern state technology. USA has exhausted its minerals and its resources of oil and coal. The richest in the world, of course, is the Soviet Union, with nearly half the world's oil and nearly 40% of the world's coal, and all of the major minerals and ore deposits essential to be the richest nation on earth eventually. Fortunately, nature has been kind for one time to the good atheistic socialist. Most African countries have achieved their independence since 1960. Yet a report of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, published last year, showed that since 1960, there has been no marked improvement in the economies of many African countries. The report also said that independent Africa has succeeded less than any other region in the world in combating the effects of underdevelopment. Such has been the heritage of U.S. imperialism and neocolonialism in Africa. As the former imperialist powers have been forced to withdraw from Africa, the United States has steadily increased its active fascist involvement. The United States' private investment in Africa increased from $664 U.S. million dollars in 1957 to some $14,000 million at the end of 1976. The total is now probably in the region of $15 million U.S. dollars. $15,000 million U.S. dollars. The average rate of profit on U.S. investments in Africa is nearly 40%, from 34 to 40%, enabling American coupon clippers, such as DuPont and Rockefeller, to suck out like vultures of Africa no less than $17 billion a year. The U.S. imperialist is the main trading partner of both Nigeria and Liberia, the two countries selected for Carter's visit. Nigeria is second only to Saudi Arabia as the source of U.S. oil imports. To back up its position in Africa, the U.S. Monopoly Capitalist Administration in 1978 proposed the largest military aid program for Africa in its entire history. A total of some $678 million in military support, military assistance programs, and in military education and training, plus $135 million in security supporting assistance. That is over $1 billion, which is twice as much as for 1977 fiscal year. This military expenditure to maintain governments that have not yet gone in to the free Soviet bloc. Even the Voice of America reveals Carter's true intention. He said, I must have a free hand. He said, the Soviet Union is putting food into Mozambique, Tanzania, and Zambia. I need a free hand to put military presence there. Never does the USA think of anything humane. When the Soviets said they would ban forever any plan to make a neutron bomb, Carter said that's easy for them to say because they wouldn't use one. They would not use a neutron bomb. Thus, even on his own Voice of America, he was conceding that the Soviet Union are a humane people that would not utilize a neutron bomb, which kills only people and all living things, but protects property. But that he, the USA, needs the bomb because the USA designed it and always think first of protecting property for the rich and killing people. 13 African countries are to be the beneficiaries, headed by Zaire and Kenya. By the way, Uganda has carried out a retaliation against the Israelis by killing off one of their chief generals by placing a bomb on a plane that blew up on its way to Kenya. Uganda is also being picked up for a world censor by the USA and open calls from the USA for his assassination. Nigeria's economy is developing faster than that of any other country in Africa, including White Union of South Africa rule. Up till now, the only developed country in Africa was the white-ruled Union of South Africa that bled the black man, according to the United Nations criteria. By the end of the century, Nigeria will be more important economically than the EEC countries, the European Common Market countries like Britain and France all put together. In May last year, Dr. Owen said British trade with Black Africa was worth almost $1,000 million U.S. and added, Nigeria has now supplanted South Africa as our single largest trading partner on the continent and is the fastest growing British imperialist export market anywhere in the world. Fascist West Germany, imperialist France, a puppet of NATO, and dominated by the Trilateral Commission of U.S. imperialism, and Japan are also rapidly building up their trade with Black Africa, whose enormous potential wealth is only now being uncovered. Nigeria has replaced South Africa as the main market for West German goods on the African continent. However, since the time of this news commentary, Nigeria is putting up boycotts to many products of the imperialist states. And that's why Africa is teeming. That's why USA is even willing to go to a thermonuclear war, because they cannot survive without bleeding and sucking the rich ore mineral deposits from the Union, from all of Africa, the richest continent next to the USSR, the Soviet Union. At the Lagos Nigeria Anti-Apartheid Conference last August, the Nigerian head of state, Lieutenant General Obasanjo, warned that foreign countries with interest in South Africa would not be permitted to operate in Nigeria in the future. And he's acting on that, in spite of the fact that he is not a socialist. Last month, he ordered public agencies immediately to withdraw their funds from Barclays because of the bank's continued collaboration with the South African fascist puppet government of U.S. imperialism. Since then, a number of American banks and corporate interests like IBM and Polaroid, IT&T, have announced their decision to limit their operations in South Africa out of fear of Nigerian reprisal. It is fear for the future of capitalism in Africa which induced Carter to visit Nigeria and Liberia, being the first president to ever lower himself to see our black brothers and sisters, whom he has no concern for at all, in that he sends our tax dollars to murder off whole villages every day. We read them in the news, from Zimbabwe to Zambia to Angola. It was Carter's visit to Nigeria and Liberia to make proclamations about freedom, hypocritical ones, but the one freedom he did not specify, and which has been equally ignored by Dr. Owen, British Foreign Secretary, is the freedom from exportation, poverty, and hunger, which centuries of imperialist looting of African resources have left in their wake, and now USA imperialists, the final holders of the senile monopoly capitalism, wants to continue that exploitation of Africa. The reading commentary of the news is about finished. The Western Freedom Crusade takes place at a time when the peoples of Africa are realizing ever more keenly that political independence of itself does not necessarily bring them the economic and social advancement they want. It is no accident that the governments of Mozambique, Angola, Congo, that's Brazzaville, and Ethiopia, among others, have embraced Marxist-Leninism in their political programs, now that most liberation movements have openly proclaimed their socialist objectives, like Tanzania and Zimbabwe, the Zimbabwean Patriotic Front, and Zambia. Nor is it an accident that in the struggle for the overthrow of the capitalist fascist order in Africa, the People's Revolutionary Organizations should have found themselves opposed and obstructed at every turn by the imperialist Trilateral Commission powers dominated by U.S. fascist monopoly capitalists. At the same time, assistance and encouragement has been given by the socialist countries, described by President Kaunda, K-A-U-N-D-A, himself in an interview with me, the writer in Lusaka, as the natural allies of the African liberation movement. President Kaunda, that is, of Zambia, has called it such. In his Cold War effusion recently, Dr. Owen likened the Cuban troops in Africa to the private armies of the Middle Ages, which moved around, tilting the military balance.